Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com.
Hey, Sex with Simmery people, you should totally come join me at the Philadelphia Podcast Festival. It's August 1st through 3rd at Philomoka in Philly Camp. You can come out and see three nights of great Philly-based podcasts, and they're recording their shows live in front of you, the audience. The lineup for some of the shows includes Talkadelphia, Story Shuffle, Talking Nerdy, The Pincushion, Stark Raven Mad, Potent Brew, and of course me, Sex with Simmery, and more. Plus, there's going to be special guests, contests. I'm bringing pole dancers, y'all. There's going to be a whole lot of excitement. So find out more information about the shows and tickets at phillypodfest.com. Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Simmery, and I am very excited to introduce today's guest. This is Emily Linden, who is the founder of the Unslut Project. Welcome, Emily.
Hi. Thanks, Simmery.
So, Unslut Project, that's exciting sounding already. It's been compared, like, there was a story about it on Slate, and they compared it to being the It Gets Better Project for slut shaming. Do you think that that's a fairly accurate representation?
I do. You know, I really admire what Dan Savage has done with the It Gets Better Project, and so I really appreciate the comparison. And I think it's similar in that it's a particular type of bullying that's really hard for kids to talk about when it's happening. So other types of bullying, you know, if you're being shamed for being fat or being not as smart as everyone else or something, some other way you're perceived, can be really traumatizing, but at least you can go to your parents and your parents aren't going to say, you are awfully fat, you know, we hate you as well. And it's not going to be kind of compounded by the adults in your life. Whereas LGBTQ kids and girls who are perceived as slutty often feel just as bullied by the adults in their lives that they should be able to confide in. They feel just as ashamed to talk to anyone about it. And so I think that that's a pretty good comparison. One of the main differences is that it's a little bit hard to get people to make videos about their experiences being perceived as a slut because it could still affect their careers really negatively. I guess that's also true for LGBTQ adults, but it's just a little harder, I guess, to convince women to contribute videos. And so a lot of my contributions are just anonymous notes rather than video recordings saying that it gets better.
So what is the Unslut Project then? Like what are you talking about in terms of submissions? What is it that you are creating and doing?
Well, two goals come to mind when I'm talking about this project. The first goal that I had, the most immediate, was to reach girls who are currently being bullied, being called sluts, and feeling ashamed of their sexuality. So girls any age, and creating a community for them to feel safe, to ask advice, and to read about other women's experiences and to be reassured that it gets better. So that's where I'm talking about the submissions from other women. At my website, unslutproject.com, is where women have been submitting stories about their own experiences, offering some advice, words of perspective that I hope can reach as many girls as possible. So that's one of the main goals. And the other goal is just to raise awareness among people who might not even think that sexual bullying is a problem or that slut shaming is a thing, and to expose these stories, sometimes anonymously, to demonstrate how pervasive it is, and to start conversations where they might not have been started otherwise.
So I find it super fascinating that you have 15-year-old AIM conversation saves. I find that super interesting.
It is. It's so, really funny.
Obviously, it ended up being incredibly helpful because we're going to talk about a little bit how that pertains to this conversation. But I do just want to know, like, do you just, like, save all internet stuff? That's just really interesting.
I no longer save all internet stuff, although I guess my Gmail does save all my chats. I don't have that toggled off. I should probably look into that. I unknowingly save an internet trail now. But when I was younger, I would print out my instant message conversations with pretty much everyone, not even just boys I had crushes on, but I would print out conversations with friends and I would glue them into my diaries.
Wow.
I'm kind of a pack rat. And in this case, it ended up being helpful, but I actually have kind of journals filled with just ridiculous IM conversations that I would not include on the Tumblr because they're not really relevant in every case. But yeah, it ended up coming in handy. It seems a little ridiculous that I have all these things saved, but I'm glad I do now.
So yeah, for those who have not checked out the Unslept project, it's a Tumblr that is essentially your uncensored diary from when you were like 11 years old.
Yeah, it starts when I'm 11. I've been posting, you know, I didn't write in my diary every day, but I've been posting almost every day, sometimes twice a day. And so I've been moving a little more quickly than real time. And so I'm already gotten to, let's see, I think right now I'm like maybe 12 and a half in the entries that I've gotten to. Mm. And things have changed a little. You know, when I first started posting the diary entries, it seemed very clear that I was the victim of the sexual bullying that I had not really brought about myself. And a lot of the responses I was getting were sympathetic. Oh, this is so horrible that this happened to you. And women who had gone through something similar. And I realized, along with everyone else, as I was typing up these entries in the past couple weeks, that it's become a lot less clear cut. Who was the bully and who was the victim. And I think I've decided to keep publishing them because I think that's really important to remember that as adults, it's easy to think, oh, that child is the victim and that child is the bully and there's a really clear power dynamic. But in all the drama that is middle school interaction, it's usually not that clear. And one of the ways that I reacted to being bullied was to turn into a bully myself a little bit.
So what prompted all of the bullying that happened to you? Was there some sort of instigating event or a rumor that started it, like, or just one day, like, out of nowhere? Like, what was the story?
Well, it started when I was probably about 10. I got my period when I was 10. I was really developed a lot earlier than most of the other girls in my grade. And so there was sexualized bullying going on from fifth grade on. Mostly boys trying to touch my breasts and girls telling me I looked gross and my clothes were too tight, that type of thing. Then when I was 11 years old in sixth grade, I was dating this boy whom I've given the pseudonym Zach in my Tumblr. And I went to third base with him, which is basically I was fingered by him. I know the bases are different from region to region. Everyone probably had some version of them. But for us, that just meant that he used his hands to touch my vagina. And so that was, everyone knew about that. And that was the first time that anyone in my grade had kind of done that, or at least that anyone had found out about it. And everyone found out about it. And the seventh grade found out about it. And the eighth grade found out about it. And high schoolers found out about it. And I kind of became the sixth grade slut, that slutty girl who went to third base, and other rumors blossomed that I had let him eat me out and given different people blowjobs, or that I did that. And I didn't. I mean, I didn't even, the idea of giving a blowjob was kind of terrifying to me. but even if I had, I didn't deserve that type of shaming at all. And so I wanted to share that. I wanted to share that in light of some of the news stories about girls who have gone through something similar and not made it through.
And so what do you think was the reaction, like what happened to Zach? I mean, like, because obviously you were both involved in literally the exact same thing. And it seems like the bullying was entirely targeted to you. Did anything happen to him at all?
No. if anything, he became more popular. He got to kind of brag about it to his friends, which is why he shared it. I mean, he was an 11-year-old boy, and this was awesome for him. You know, I'm sure he had seen porn where this type of thing happened, and he wanted to share it with all his friends, understandably. And for me, it became this really shameful event that, to be honest, I remembered differently than it happened. That was one of the most surprising things. I kind of lived the last 15 years of my life assuming that when I was 11, I had made this awful mistake where I went to third base with Zach, and I had paid for that. And that's kind of the way I perceived my middle school years. Then finding these diaries and reading through them, I realized that it was a little bit coerced. It wasn't like I had done anything particularly wrong or shameful. And it was just hard to reread those and realize that I had really been kind of unfairly targeted, and I didn't deserve the type of negative attention that I got. And it was cathartic for me. And so I thought that it might help other girls who don't have that type of perspective yet.
And I think it's also really interesting that it was interesting to high schoolers. Like, it's fascinating that high schoolers found that gossip to be worthy of, like, going on about that. I mean, and then when you mentioned that, I hadn't thought about this in a really long time, but I remember being a high schooler and hearing about the occasional gossipy exploit about something that a middle schooler had done, and being very struck by the fact that that was probably the only thing I knew about that person. Like,
right.
Like,
yeah.
When do high schoolers even notice that middle schoolers exist? Like,
it's when they have sex, or they have, you know, do some kind of sexual act that becomes public knowledge. I know. I remember being in high school, and even in college, you know, you hear about things that freshmen do, and, oh, that slutty freshman, she's such a whore, she slept with so-and-so's boyfriend. I mean, that's often the only type of attention that younger women and girls get from anyone in the grades above them, and I think that's really a horrible thing.
And the egregious double standard, and I have to admit, like, my own I did the exact same thing. I remember a girl that I was friends with was her boyfriend cheated on her with another girl that I knew. And did I go yell at the boyfriend? No, I went and yelled at the girl. And to this day, I feel like an absolute jerk about that. But when I was 15, 16 years old, I thought that was a completely reasonable response. And I don't know where I got that idea.
I mean, me too. And that's the thing, is that we all, I think the woman who has never felt the impulse or acted on slut-shaming another woman is really rare. And that's one of the, like I said, one of the main points of this project is to kind of inspire people to reevaluate their behavior and to recognize that we're all part of the problem. As awful as that seems, it's not like there's the good team who never slut shames and the bad team who does. We all do it, or tend to do it, because we all live in this culture. And I think the idea is just to recognize that it's not helpful, and in fact, it's destructive, and to change our behavior.
Yeah, I mean, as an adult, we can, like, contemplate it from this cerebral place where, like, you know, misogyny can only exist when women, you know, are part of the system, and they also engage in it. But as a middle schooler, it's also just like, you know, it's been done to me, and it's a power play. So when I want to be powerful, I will do the thing that I have seen works. And that's really all it is. It's just like, you don't have a lot of role models, or, like, there's not a whole lot of, you know, templates to follow for not engaging that behavior. There's not a whole lot of, like, how to be, you know, powerful and aggressive in what feels like a very jungle-esque environment occasionally without being kind of mean. There's not a lot of guidance in terms of that. And I don't think parents have usually, like, their empathy goggles on when they're trying to give advice about it.
It's true. And it's hard, honestly, to put yourself in the position of an 11-year-old. That's why I decided to share my diaries word for word, because not only does it kind of bring people back to when they were having those thoughts, but it's also really shocking. In some cases for me, I mean, this was me technically, but 15 years ago, and I say, oh my gosh, I was awful, or I can't believe these thoughts went through my head. And it's hard to, I mean, I wouldn't have told an adult about it at the age of 11. And it's hard as adults to really communicate with preteens and teenagers on their level, because we have this perspective. You know, this is ridiculous. This will pass. These people won't matter to you in the future. But that part of the brain hasn't yet developed. I don't think it even fully develops till age 25, but that's probably pseudoscience. I can't cite any references to support that. But the idea that, you know, having a sense of self over a longer period of time, and the consequent sense of perspective that we get when that part of our brain develops, you know, teenagers don't have that. And they just think, wow, everything that's happening right now is so important, and this is insurmountable, this type of drama and bullying and pressure that I'm facing. And so, yeah, sorry, go
no,
on.
No, that's amazing. Like, this is transporting me back, and I'm thinking, like, how incredibly true this is. And it goes to other things as well. Like, for instance, the world was supposed to end May 21st of 2011, right? The world was supposed to end.
Oh, yeah, that didn't happen.
Yeah, and you know, I was like, yep, sure it is. Yep, great. And then, you know, because we'd had Y2K, we'd had people say this a ton of times. And I remember being a little bit nervous about Y2K, but then, like, it came and it went. And then I was like, oh, whatever. God, I was such a weenie. But then on May 21st, 2011, I was actually in a position to be surrounded by some teenagers who were actually legitimately super nervous because they were not dumb kids, but nobody had ever suggested the world was going to end before and been proven wrong in their lifetime that they knew about. And, like,
right.
So even just stuff like that, completely separated from, you know, the emotions of, like, never having, you know, an adult relationship, quote unquote, whatever, like, you just literally don't have the context to understand how infinitesimally small stuff is, and it has such, like, an incredible impact on, like, the way your brain works for the rest of your life.
It really does. It's really amazing to read about some of the psychological studies that are being done on preteens and the development of the brain. I mean, they have been done over the past decades. It's really enlightening, and I think really helpful to think about in terms of bullying generally, and also about as women develop our sense of sexuality and our sexual identity, how, like you said, what an impact that sense of shame can have on us, that can just be overwhelming and last for our entire lives in some cases.
So I've read some things about, you know, how high school, you're thrust together with this group of people, and literally the only things you have in common are geography and age. And you have to, like, just sort it out, and you have to, like, make it work, and, like, it's your entire universe. It's your job. It's your social life. It is your entire world while you're there, and you are purely at the mercy of the people who happen to be serving time next to you. And, like, mm-hmm. Do you over this thing? I mean, you're getting to relive that time period now with the wisdom of, you know, time having passed and your education, etc. Do you have any suggestions for changing things from, like, an educational institutional perspective?
Yeah, I think one of the changes that we're seeing recently is comprehensive sex ed. So the idea of including LGBTQ education, not assuming everyone in the room is straight, which has been, I mean, just the that's been the default forever, and so trying to change that in schools is really a struggle. But also, comprehensive sex ed includes it goes beyond abstinence only education, of course, to include STDs, condom usage, all different types of perspectives about how to be safe about sex rather than not having sex, and it also includes, in most cases, if I'm not mistaken, pleasure, learning about sex for pleasure and how to get the most out of it that way in hopefully a safe way. And I think that that's going along the right direction for change, is reaching kids as early as maybe 9 or 10 years old or wherever we start learning about puberty in school, and really presenting sex in a positive way. Not, oh, if you have sex, these horrible things will happen to you, because then when people start sexually experimenting, it's easy to bully them and shame them, because we say, oh, we learned in sex ed class that that's bad what you're doing, and you're bad consequently. So I think implementing laws and legislation and really working to enforce comprehensive sex ed from an early age is one of the best ways to change the minds of the next upcoming generation.
I think it's also incredibly relevant that you're talking about how sex ed from a pleasure perspective and the double standards of sex shaming for females, because when somebody suggests maybe we don't tell kids about sex, maybe we hold off, maybe they'll learn it when, you know, it's appropriate, maybe there's a later date, maybe marriage, maybe whatever. But, like, that is so clearly going to mean that when girls have sex, it's going to suck. That's ultimately what that means. Because that whole, like, they'll learn it on their own. like that sort of thing, that whole idea that you shouldn't actually talk to kids about pleasure or about, you know, the actual physics of things that go on or any of that sort of stuff, basically is just signing up young girls for years of unsatisfying sexual experiences with boys will probably be fine and able to get off just okay. without too much help.
You're totally right.
And girls having like unsatisfying, possibly painful things. And as you were talking about, maybe even coerced into these experiences that they then like can think back on as totally not worth it.
I know. I mean, I hope they can think back on it as totally not worth it. But I know women in their late 20s who've never had an orgasm from a partner, or who are still kind of afraid to masturbate because they think it's like gross and wrong. I mean, it just blows my mind that I feel for these women who still feel so sexually crippled because of the conceptions that the way that sex was represented to them when they were younger and have never had a pleasurable sexual encounter. I mean, it's just insane that there are so many women who live their lives that way and who feel embarrassed to even really talk about it or think about how they might change that.
Well, yeah, I think it's we don't talk about sex experiences, like real actual things that have happened, either positive or negative, and it makes the whole thing very shameful. And it feels like the one of the great applications of the Unsled Project is that for somebody who has a really negative sexual experience, like perhaps something that was non-consensual, taking away some of the stigma of being able to talk openly about what happened, that you're not a bad person for having experienced it. And there's a whole lot of examples of young women who've been driven to depression and even suicide because they were unable to give their side of the story in a world that was more than happy to tell the story for them in whatever way they wanted to frame it.
Exactly. That's one of the reasons that I decided to start publishing this in the end of April. I just heard about Rehtaeh Parsons' suicide. Mm-hmm. And there have been, you know, countless others in the news recently that just really, they not only kind of rattled me personally because I could relate to the girls, it just demonstrated the need for an outlet or a sense of community, as I said, for them to read experiences from other women and gain some sense of perspective. You know, it will get better for you. It can get better for you. You can overcome this and not only overcome the bullying, but embrace your sexuality in a way that will be positive for you as opposed to hiding it away. There has been some confusion. I called it the Unslut Project. And I didn't mean doing away with sluts or, you know, convincing people not to be so slutty, which some people who have that as their goal have misunderstood the title, just basically undoing the negative connotations that surround the word slut and the whole idea of being a slut, you know, beyond the word, being sexually promiscuous has such a negative connotation for girls. And I really, really want to work to undo that and embrace this safe exploration of sexual urges and curiosities, which I think we all know are totally normal and should totally be discussed. And girls should be made to feel comfortable about this type of thing rather than secretive and shameful.
And what do you think about the word slut? I mean, there's a whole lot of, you know, disagreement from people who otherwise are generally sex positive on whether or not that word should be reclaimed or whether or not it ever can be. Do you think that word is always going to just have a negative connotation and we can just, like, change who it's directed at? Like, what do you think is going to happen there?
I don't think it will always necessarily have a negative connotation. I hope that in the near future, maybe in my lifetime, that type of negative sexual connotation goes away altogether for women. That might be wishful thinking. It might take longer. But I think reclaiming it, I'm not against the idea of reclaiming the word. I just think it can be confusing because there are so many people who still use it seriously that not everyone's going to be in on the reclaiming joke, you know, like mm-hmm. calling someone a slut and meaning it as a term of endearment kind of plays into the whole conception of the way that women treat each other and judge each other. And if someone overhears you say that, chances are they're going to think that you mean it in a negative way, and it kind of reinforces the whole stigma around the word. So I just think that there not enough people have been converted yet to have the reclaiming really make sense without just reinforcing the negative use of the word, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think what comes to mind for me is like sort of the controversy around like the slut walk, and that some people have concerns about the nature of, you know, boldly claiming they're a slut for the purposes of, you know, what the slut walk is about, you know, not victim blaming, about allowing women to just, you know, exist in the world without being constantly subjected to harassment, like, et cetera, et cetera. And some folks are like, it's problematic because not everybody wants to claim that title and not everybody can. And it's got some sort of like ethnic, you know, specificities that only certain people are feeling that they can be included in this group. And, you know, it's just like, it's a very complicated thing about a four-letter word.
Like, right. I mean, it's really easy to problematize kind of any branch of feminism or any kind of movement toward sexual liberation for women, because there are so many caveats and restrictions on how we can go about doing that. So I'm in support of anything that promotes sexual freedom and consent culture over rape culture, and that has that as its motivation, because the effectiveness of everything with that as its goal can really be debated from either end. And I think that wasting time, I mean, it's not wasting time, it's discourse that's meant to happen and that it can be helpful. But when we kind of tear each other down, I guess is what I mean, when people speak up and say, oh no, the slut walk is counterproductive and awful, and really they have the same goals as the slut walk, it's just a different way of doing it that might appeal to different people, I think that can be harmful to the movement as a whole. You know, we all have the same hope for the future, for women's future. And I think that however we go about that, I think it's good to have many different ways that we're going about that, because different ways are going to resonate with different audiences and with different people who want to participate or learn from them.
Yeah. So who's coming across your project so far? What's the reaction been? Are young people reading this? Are adults looking back on their lives reading this? Like, who's your audience?
Both. I have a lot of young girls contacting me, and that's the best part of the project for me personally. I really get a lot out of hearing girls who say they're preteens or high school students and they've gone through something like this recently, and reading my experiences or reading the shared experiences of other women on the website is really helpful to them. That's wonderful to hear. And I've also, in addition to the Tumblr, I was approached by Wattpad, which is a story sharing website, and the main audience is young girls. And they approached me a few months ago and asked if I would publish the diary entries as a story on their website. So kind of chapter by chapter is entry by entry. And that I was rated the number one nonfiction book, which is the way that they categorize these stories, on Wattpad. And that's been wonderful, because that audience is mainly preteen and teenager girls. It's exactly who I want to reach and who I want to expose to this project. And they've been reacting really well. And that feels great. And then the other end is women who can relate, women who are my age in their late 20s or early 30s, and who recognize all the cultural references or the bands I listened to and the TV shows I was watching, and also recognize themselves in the girl who was writing the diary entries. That's great to hear from them. I've also heard from some men, which is great, men who say they had never thought about this type of thing, and it just blows their mind to read the way that women experience the world versus the way they assumed women experienced the world. And so that's been wonderful as well. It's been mostly, really surprisingly, mostly positive feedback, really positive feedback. It's great.
And I'm actually going to be spending some time tomorrow night. I'm going to, this is a little bit of a slice of my life, I'm going to a One Direction concert tomorrow, you know, like you do. Yeah, I will be accompanied by three awesome 12-year-olds. What advice do you give me for when I'm hanging out with my 12-year-olds?
You mean in how you represent?
Yeah, like when I'm listening to them talk, you know, if maybe something comes up, or, you know, like I hear them talking about, you know, other girls or that sort of thing. Like, what advice do you have for those of us who do interact with girls of that age? Like, what is helpful to give them, like, little doses of something productive so they can avoid the missteps that we have?
I think one of the most helpful ways to approach it is to ask insightful and respectful questions. So I remember being a preteen, probably more clearly than most people because I have these diaries to reference, which is great. And I remember really resenting adults who tried to tell me what to do in a way that indicated they didn't quite respect what I wanted to do. So even though I wanted to do ridiculous things, I wanted that to be respected by the adults in my life. So I think when I speak to preteen girls, I tend to ask them questions. Why do you think that's important? You know, if they say, oh, look at that girl, she's dressed like a slut. Why does that bother you? Like, why did you want to comment on that? What does that mean for you? Not judgmentally or trying to shame them necessarily, but just why did that catch your attention? What do you think about that? And I think that would, it's a pretty good teaching tool generally, I think, to have people kind of come to their own conclusions rather than just saying, we don't talk about women that way. As much as that's what we want them to get from it, I think having girls come to that conclusion themselves is most helpful, because they can really think to themselves, why does that stick out in my mind? Why do I care if she's looking like a slut? Like, why does that bother me? And maybe hopefully come to the conclusion that it shouldn't and it won't.
What is that about, actually? That sort of slut-shaming, gender-policing thing. What is the internal motivation there that is going through our minds, whether consciously or not?
You know, I have heard that it's biological and we don't like the competition. I don't really buy that. I think it's entirely social, and that we're socialized to keep slutty women in check. You know, they're a threat, and they don't need to be. That's why I think that I encourage socialization toward another end. But I think that it's just women who are not paired off with a man, not under control, so to speak, not spoken for, are traditionally a threat to society because they can become powerful and they don't need to the support of a stable partnership with a man to do anything. And I think that just the patriarchal traditions that we inherit encourage us to look down on that and to keep that in check and like you said, police that. And sexuality is one way that women can express their independence that way. And it's really amazing that the kids pick up on that so young. But like I said, I don't think they need to. I think if we as adults evaluate our own behavior in the way that we enforce certain judgments or certain opinions for kids, we can hopefully have them grow up in a world where that doesn't even occur to them, that a woman acting sexual is inherently bad.
And I think you've also sort of pointed out that it's not even necessarily acting sexual, but being perceived as though they might be. Mm-hmm. And how you talked about the rumors that swirled around you weren't even necessarily related to things you'd actually even done, but just merely like the possibility that you were engaged in this entire like spectrum of behavior. Like anywhere along it, you might as well be all the way on it.
Exactly. And that's what's so sinister about it. I mean, a lot of people conflate really justified anger toward a woman for her sexual behavior, which can be destructive and used in a manipulative or mean way. Say a woman is your friend and knows you have a crush on a guy and she goes out of her way to sleep with him. Okay, that's bitchy behavior. You have a right to be mad at her. It doesn't have to do with her sexuality, only it has to do with her betrayal and her decision to act in a destructive, mean way. People often conflate that type of righteous justifiable anger towards someone who's treated you in a bad way with women's sexuality generally. So I think there's a real difference between a woman being sexual in a way that is actually quite threatening to your happiness and a woman, which, you know, men can do as well. That's not a gender thing at all. Everyone can hurt each other with the people they choose to have sex with. I mean, that's just part of being human. Separating that from just general anger toward a woman who seems sexual, as you say, like it's not even tied to any behavior or anything that affects you as a person. A lot of people just feel this anger toward women who dare to look as if they might behave in a certain way. And that's part of the thing that just blows my mind, is that it's so deeply ingrained in us to judge women.
You know, I feel like you can totally disregard this. This is just a theory that I have about one of the possible motivations for that. And I feel like so much of socialization towards females is getting them to rein it in, to keep the ego in check, to not think you're pretty, to tell yourself you're not, you know, you're not all that, etc. And when we see someone who does not seem fettered by that sort of like self-contained, you know, I'm going to keep it down, I'm not going to draw too much attention to myself, I'm not going to, you know, be opened up to critique, I want to avoid criticism. If we see someone who's not going for that, I think there's a degree of envy that they are not subject to that same scrutiny, and a little bit of anger that they are, that they're so bold that that they don't have to be, you know, reined in. And one of the things I see, like, in locker rooms, the age group of women who will walk around and, like, just be like, this is me, I'm naked, I'm walking from the shower over to the changing area, it's cool, this is just what my body looks like, they're mm-hmm. much older. And the younger women who would theoretically, you know, have the body that you would be more okay with showing off with are more covered. And I think it's just that sort of, like, if you go around showing it off, it's sort of braggy, it's drawing attention and all of these negative things. And I that's just a theory I have. I don't know if that resonates with you, or if you think that's getting anywhere near accurate.
I agree completely. And actually, that really resonates with me. I recently, just this past week, encountered a quote, which is pretty famous, by Marianne Williamson. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. Hmm. And that rang true for me. And actually, it's about what you just said, that we are taught that modesty, modesty has a positive connotation, but this type of not wishing to offend anyone with our beauty or with our sexuality is the proper way to exist. And anything that kind of goes against that is offensive, because if I'm reining myself in and she doesn't feel that she needs to, that's not fair. You know, I can totally see that. And I think I was thinking about that recently with people who choose to, it's often fundamentalist Christians who choose, and other religions as well, who choose to wait until they're married to have sex, and think that everyone ought to. I can totally see, if I were making the life decision to wait until I was married, assuming I get married, to have sex, I would be pissed off that not everyone else had to do that, because that would suck for me. Like, I can't have sex? Like, why can she have sex? That's not fair. And I would be outraged by it. And so I understand where that comes from. I just think it's a shame that that is kind of the status quo.
Yeah, wow. This is resonating on every level through every generation. So even though it is specifically pertaining to diaries that you wrote in this specific age group, like, it continues on, like, through the entire lifespan, until you start getting to that age where you realize that stuff is bullshit. Like,
yeah, I mean, but some people never reach that age, whatever it is. And yeah. I think that's the thing. Like, when a lot of anti-bullying programs kind of... the word. They think of bullies as villains, or as these children that are just bad, and we need to get them under control and kind of create an environment where those bullies feel uncomfortable and maybe they'll change. But kids don't just pop up one day and come up with all these ways to hurt other kids on their own. I mean, unless they're psychopath kids. I mean, maybe some do, but most bullies are inspired by what they see their parents doing and what they see adults in their lives doing and teachers doing. And in the media, they see that women who dress a certain way are treated a certain way. And I'm not just talking about TV shows or anything. Like, in the news media, we see this in tabloid magazines. And they absorb that and implement it in their own interactions with their peers. And I think that's a really important thing to recognize. Kids don't just pull this stuff out of thin air. They watch and they learn behaviors from us. And so... I think one of the main behaviors that they ought to learn from us is that sex is good, consensual, safe sex is a positive thing, and it's not your business how anyone else does that, as long as it's respectful and consensual. Other people's sex has nothing to do with you if they don't want it to, and if you don't want it to, and that's fine. Just removing the stigma and the shame that's been so ingrained in the idea of sex, I think, is a responsibility that we have to our kids, whether we have them now or whether we plan to have kids in the future or kids we interact with, so that they can grow up without that.
So going forward, what is the trajectory? What are your goals for the UNSLED project?
Well, I'll probably stop publishing my diaries in the next few months, just because as I got into high school, after about freshman year of high school, I really was able to move past a lot of that drama. I got into my academics and different talents that I was cultivating, and my parents encouraged me to get out of the school environment as much as I could where this type of thing was happening. So the diaries become a lot less interesting, a lot less relevant to bullying and sexual shaming and the themes of the UNSLET project. And I hope that the project can become a space, can continue to be a space for girls to go for advice, for women to share their experiences. And actually, I haven't talked about this with anyone yet, so this is the first time I'm sharing this, but I'm in the... have a plan to make an UNSLET documentary. One of my best friends from college is in the film industry, and we're going to put together a documentary that features different women's stories and will hopefully reach way more people than my website can or even a book could, spreading the message and encouraging people to evaluate their behavior and also have a chance to see what other women have gone through. And so that's totally in the works. It's not funded yet, but that's the main project for the coming year for the UNSLET project.
Very cool. I am definitely looking forward to that. Do you have any other projects that you find interesting that you would recommend people check out that are along the same lines?
Yeah, I recently partnered with Project Anti-Bully, which is about bullying generally. And I talked with Fabiana. She's the founder of on her podcast, and they've got a Facebook page and a website. Everyday Sexism is another really popular, they have a really popular Twitter feed and website where women can share stories about everyday sexism, things that happen to them just in everyday life that are really outrageous in some cases, and in some cases wouldn't be considered outrageous, unfortunately. And that's another product that I really support, and I've had a lot of inspiration there.
Very cool. So anything else you want to recommend people check out? We've got the UNSLET project was on Tumblr. You've got is there a Twitter feed of it as well?
Yeah. So the website is just www.unsletproject.com, and it's a Tumblr, but you don't have to go through Tumblr to get to it. And I'm on Twitter at UNSLETproject, so UNSLUT project. And I always tweet relevant news in women's issues. I've been tweeting often on that and using the hashtag UNSLET. And I have a Facebook page too at facebook.com/UNSLETproject. And that's rather new. I was kind of boycotting Facebook after there were those groups that encourage violence against women and weren't being monitored. But after that, I got back on Facebook after they took those pages down, which Everyday Sexism was a part of. And have been starting to promote that a little more. So yeah, I hope that people will check out the Twitter and check out my webpage and hopefully share their experiences, because the more the better.
Yeah, I like it. It's kind of akin to like a holla back sort of idea.
It is. It's the same idea. I think this is a really cool concept that a lot of people have been getting on board, you know, getting women to speak up and share what goes on in their everyday lives. I mean, even my boyfriend, I'm trying to explain to him what it's like for me to walk down the street by myself. And speaking of holla back, it just reminded me. And he's like, nobody ever yells out the window at you. You're lying. Like, when I'm there, nobody ever does it. That's because you're this big, like, 6.5-foot guy and you're walking next to me. Nobody's going to holla at me when you're there, you know. He doesn't even, like, have a concept. And this is my boyfriend. He knows about my project. It's amazing how important it is to reach people who might not even think this is a problem.
I think that's an incredibly huge point. And Patton Oswalt recently wrote a very long essay that at the end he talked a little bit about rape jokes. And one of the things that he's sort of coming around at is, like, you know, he'd never heard rape jokes and he'd never been offended by jokes that he heard. So, like, his conception was that there was no problem. And then it was because people have started talking about it more, and people have, like, I am really impressed at the level of attention that the, you know, all the discussions about sexual assault and about consent and about street harassment and all of these different related things, they're really actually getting a whole lot of attention right now. And it's reaching a lot of important people. And he is somebody who has a huge platform and is starting to get it. And it's, like, really cool when all these people are like, oh, maybe just because it isn't in my personal experience, maybe that doesn't make it imaginary.
Exactly. Yeah, I read that essay as well. I was really glad to read that. And I think you're totally right. It's the same, you know, it's the same concept as racism. It just, you identify as a certain race, a certain gender, and you go through the world and that's your reality. And it's often impossible to even imagine what someone else's reality might be, especially, like you said, if they don't share it. And so that's why it's so important to share these true stories that we live every day.
I love it. I am so so glad that this project exists, and I'm super glad that we got to talk to you today. So thank you very much, Emily, for your time and your awesome insights and all of your work.
Oh, thank you. It was so fun to talk with you.
Yeah. And thank you, everyone, for listening, and have an excellent day.
Hi, it's Emily Linden with the Unslut Project, and I'm so excited to update you with our plans for a documentary film. We're going to spread the message against slut-shaming and sexual bullying in all its forms to as broad an audience as possible. And to make this film, we need your help. We're hoping to fund the film mostly through crowdsourcing. So our Kickstarter page is going to be live beginning on August 1st. And you can watch our promotional video for the film and donate to the Kickstarter page through the Unslut Project website. That's www.unslutproject.com. And we hope that you'll invest whatever you can and join us in making this film and like I said, spreading the message to as many people as we can. Thank you in advance for your support.
Thank you for listening to Sex with Timory. Sex with Timory, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithtimory.com, Sex with Timory on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timory_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you.